Area was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. A federal appeals court Thursday refused to reinstate President Donald Trump's ban on travelers from seven nations: Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. The vote in the three-judge panel from the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco was unanimous. Last week, District Judge James Robart in Seattle issued a temporary restraining order halting the ban after the states of Washington and Minnesota sued. Bob Ferguson is the Washington State Attorney General.
The president does have a choice. He can continue to fight this, or he can tear up this executive order and start over. I would strongly encourage him to consider the latter course of action.
President Trump says his administration will challenge the decision.
We have a situation where the security of our country is at stake. And it's a very, very serious situation. So we look forward, as I just said, to seeing them in court.
The president told reporters he thinks he will ultimately win the case. The top U.S. commander in Afghanistan told the Armed Services Committee Thursday that he believes the U.S.-backed Afghan forces are in a stalemate in the 15-year-old war. General John Nicholson spoke before members of Congress.
Of the 98 U.S.-designated terrorist groups globally, 20 operate in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region, along with three violent extremist organizations. This is the highest concentration of terrorist groups anywhere in the world, which underscores the importance of our counterterrorism platform in the Central Asia-South Asia region.
General John Nicholson said he needs a few thousand more soldiers to break the stalemate. Turkey says a Russian airstrike has accidentally killed three Turkish soldiers in northern Syria. Russian President Vladimir Putin offered condolences. This is VOA News. Pakistan says India's rapid development of nuclear weaponry poses a threat to the region. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nafis Zakaria said Thursday at his weekly news conference, India is stockpiling nuclear materials outside international standards and building a secret nuclear city in the south.
With conventional weapons balance already disturbed, India's nuclear weapons buildup has dangerous proportions to tip the strategic balance and endanger the peace of the region and beyond.
India promptly rejected those allegations as unfounded. U.S. President Donald Trump says he will make a major tax announcement in the next few weeks. He cited his desire to lower the overall tax burden on American businesses. The president spoke during a White House meeting with airline executives.
I, Jeff Sessions, do solemnly swear.
I, Jeff Sessions, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That was the sound today as former Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions was sworn in as the next U.S. Attorney General. Sessions said the U.S. needs a lawful system of immigration and vowed to uphold laws that he said were largely unenforced during the last administration. A judge on Kenya's high court says the Dadaab refugee camp will remain open. He said the government order to close the world's largest refugee camp was discriminatory. He complained that the government decision specifically targeted Somali refugees. Nine Republican senators have signed a letter requesting President Donald Trump take a tough stand when dealing with Russia. But the letter also encouraged the president to seek common ground with the Russians. The senator said it is important to confront Russia on such issues as cybersecurity and aggression against Ukraine. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe arrived Thursday in Washington, where he will have an Oval Office meeting with President Trump and a White House lunch. He will later have a golf outing in Florida. The administration hopes to reassure Japan's leader that the Trump administration stands with its ally, quoting now, shoulder to shoulder, 100%. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson met Thursday with the European Union's chief diplomat, Federica Mogherini. Mogherini's task Thursday was to test the waters for Europe's relationship with the new administration, beginning with Tillerson, who is the top U.S. diplomat. Afterward, Mogherini pronounced the meeting in Washington fruitful. A Palestinian teenager attacked shoppers at an open-air market in central Israel Thursday. Police say he attacked the shoppers with gunfire and a screwdriver. At least six people were hurt before he was tackled by passersby. Earlier Thursday, an explosion killed two Palestinians along the Gaza border with Egypt in what appeared to be a strike on cross-border smuggling tunnels. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Friday, February 10th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. There was a fist fight on Thursday in South Africa's parliament as President Jacob Zuma gave his annual address to parliament.
Zuma is no longer a president that deserves a respect from anyone. He has stolen from us, he has collapsed the economy of South Africa, he has made this country a joke, and after that, he has laughed at us.
That's far-left politician Julius Malema, the leader of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party, rejects allegations he's involved in a drug trafficking ring. Somalia's new president outlines a program for his first 100 days in office, and the body of the late Congolese opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi may not be coming home soon from Brussels.
We have said that before bringing the corpse of President Tshisekedi, we should have a new government. From the 31st December 2016
accord. Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. Zimbabwe authorities released a pastor who had been critical of President Mugabe, and the parents in Cameroon's English-speaking regions prevent their children from going to school. Those story plus Samson Omale's post in our Black History Month facts and contest are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South African President Jacob Zuma's annual address to Parliament was greeted yesterday by high drama in the form of an actual brawl as rowdy, contentious red-uniformed opposition members fought burly, white-shirted security guards after more than an hour of bitter ranting, obscenities, and vicious vitriol. Outside the building, police fired stun grenades and tear gas at protesters. Mr. Zuma is facing low approval ratings as the nation's economy drags and his popularity appears to have bottomed out. As VOA's Anita Powell reports, such tension is not uncommon at the speech, which has become an annual showcase for political fireworks.
President Jacob Zuma's rhetorical positions and policy goals are rarely the highlight of his annual address to the South African people. The speech is a chance for the president to discuss progress the government has made and its policies for the coming year. But in recent years, speeches have been stopped by jeers from opposition members, expulsions, walkouts, and even police entering the chamber to try to restore order.
There's nothing that Zuma deserves from us in a form of a respect. Zuma is no longer a president that deserves a respect from anyone. He has stolen from us, he has collapsed the economy of South Africa, he has made this country a joke, and after that, he has laughed at us. We cannot allow Zuma to do as he wishes in this country. We are not going to allow that. We are doing what we are doing because we do not recognize him as our president. He is not our president. Please.
That is far-left politician Julius Malema challenging the increasingly unpopular president during last year's address. This year, the presidency has summoned 441 soldiers to parliament for what it says is safety and security. That has drawn sharp criticism from opposition politicians, with Malema, the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, calling the move a declaration of war. Professor Susan Boysen of the University of the Witwatersrand says the drama is not entirely bad for the president.
In some respects, it seems almost as if President Jacob Zuma has been trying to distract attention from the content of the State of the Nation address. And that is especially through the developments in the last day or two around the security arrangements in particular.
Unemployment has risen overall since he took office in 2009. South Africa's currency, worth 8 rand to 1 US dollar when he became president, now hovers around 13 rand per dollar. And its instability has been neatly in sync with Zuma's unpopular political moves, like his decision to go through three finance ministers in a week in late 2015. Independent political analyst Ralph Matega says he expects Zuma to revisit the familiar issues of poverty, unemployment, and persistent inequality. But he also notes the speech is an opportunity for Zuma to define his legacy and defend his party. Zuma's successor as leader of the ruling African National Congress will be chosen at the end of this year and will likely be South Africa's next president in 2019. But the ANC no longer holds the supremacy it claimed when it took power in 1994. In last year's local election, it lost key municipalities to the opposition.
What is maybe different about this year's State of the Nation is that the ANC-led government will have to define itself, explain itself as to how it has performed in the last 21 years.
Matega will see the speech in person because he says it is the little details in the chamber that really matter. Who sits where, who walks the red carpet in which order, and how certain top political figures react. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The new president of Somalia, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo, has been outlining what he would do in his first 100 days in office. He spoke with Philistine Imam of VOA Somali Service.
My feeling is something I cannot imagine because I have been working hard for the past 15, 16 months and I have been campaigning in Somalia as well as in Nairobi in talking to all politicians, particularly members of parliament. And as a result of that, resulted my victory last night.
Mr. President, what's your plan for first 100 days in your office?
First, I have to appoint a new prime minister whom will introduce his plan and his strategy as to how he will tackle the security issues and to improve the humanitarian situation in Somalia. As you know, there is a huge drought everywhere in Somalia, which definitely will produce a famine. So we have to appeal to the international community to provide humanitarian assistance to those affected people in Somalia. So that new prime minister definitely will put together his cabinet within hopefully 30 days after I appoint him or her, even though I haven't decided yet. So he will introduce his plan of action within the next 100 days. Inshallah.
And Somalia is one of the seven countries which President Trump banned to enter in U.S. How you feel about it as Somali president and as a U.S. citizen?
Well, it's part of my responsibility to talk this issue with the U.S. government by conveying our message to the president and his government that the Somali people are hardworking people who raise their families in the United States. So we will see if he can change that policy and exclude Somalis from that list.
That's new Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo speaking with Philistine Imam of VOA Somali Service. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, the body of the late opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi may not be coming home soon from Brussels, where he died a week ago at age 84. Martin Fayulu, a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement, says before Tshisekedi's body is brought home, a new government must be formed out of the December 31, 2016 peace accord because Tshisekedi played a leading role in bringing about that agreement. That agreement calls for President Joseph Kabila to remain in office until elections are held later this year. Fayulu says in the African tradition, when a chief dies, the people must reconcile before he is buried.
The nation as a whole has been or is taken hostage by a handful of politicians who have politicized such a problem. We condemn the fact that they prevent the tomorrow's leader of our nation to acquire the necessary knowledge to be at the helm of this nation tomorrow. It is wrong to do it. Just because the government is ready to negotiate, the government says that no matter what the problem, it is always possible to find a solution provided that people of goodwill come together, team up together, sit around the table, and you examine the problem.
I understand where you're coming from. However, some of these English-speaking areas are saying...
We have said that before bringing the corpse of President Tshisekedi, we should have a new government. From the 31st December 2016 accord, it's very important because the government cannot bury the corpse of the President Tshisekedi. Tshisekedi fought for the change. He fought for the accord. And we want, before his corpse to go, we have to see the change. That change for what he fought. We cannot accept that the current government of Mr. Badilanga to bury the corpse of Tshisekedi. We cannot accept that.
Mr. Fayulu, what does bringing the body of Mr. Tshisekedi, bringing it home, what does that have to do with the implementation of the agreement and the formation of a new government?
We said that the Congo, we are apart. We are not together. We are not reconciled. And in our customs, when the chief, the guy like Tshisekedi, passed away, we should have a new government so we can bury him in peace. We can reconcile the people, and the whole Congo lives. What we are saying is that. And we are not playing again. We are not turning around. We want just to recognize the work of President Tshisekedi.
Is it true that you are making this demand about President Kabila and the government, the formation of the new government, because you do not recognize President Kabila now?
I'm saying this. Anybody having any position today in this country, this position is due to the December 2016 accord. Mr. Kabila, if he's there today, is because of that accord. And apart that accord, is nothing. That's what we are saying. If they don't want to apply to implement the accord, okay, we back to square zero, where nobody recognized Mr. Kabila. We have to apply the accord. That's it.
Mr. Fayulu, is it true that the opposition, the Rassemblement, or the party of Mr. Tshisekedi has asked the government to build a mausoleum for the late Tshisekedi in the center of Kinshasa? Is that true?
Yes. Well, we said that, yes, because this is the request of the people of Congo. This is one of the prerequisites that we have put in place, that we need the corpse of President Tshisekedi to be somewhere where people can come all over the world and visit the place so we can recognize that he was a true hero.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, February 10th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's information minister has expressed concern after parents in the English-speaking parts of the country prevented their children from going to school. And this follows weeks of protests by teachers and lawyers that have led to the closure of schools in the regions. Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakari tells viewers Peter Clotty that it's unfortunate that the education of children will be sacrificed for politics, which he says isn't good for the country's future leaders.
The nation as a whole has been or is taken hostage by a handful of politicians who have a politicized. It's such a problem. We condemn the fact that they prevent the tomorrow's leader of our nation to acquire the necessary knowledge to be at the helm of this nation tomorrow. It is wrong to do it. Just because the government is ready to negotiate, the government says that no matter what the problem, it is always possible to find a solution provided that people of goodwill come together, team up together, sit around the table. You examine the problem.
I understand where you're coming from. However, some of these English-speaking areas are saying that even the very constitution you are referring to is not being respected. The only implementation of the constitution was the removal of term limits to allow President Paul Biya to run in perpetuity. And they also said that internet and communication have been cut to the English-speaking areas because of concerns they've raised for the government to address, which they say the government has not addressed, and that concerns that they want negotiations, the government has flatly refused by choosing their own mediators to negotiate with them, and that they don't have a government that has the goodwill to politically negotiate to resolve their concerns. What do you say to that?
Which is completely wrong. Which is completely wrong. And this assessment of this situation is wrong and biased against the government. Let me put it in this way. As far as the Constitution is concerned, when you raise the issue of federalism or secession, these are the two major problems for which nobody in this nation, including the head of state, has the solution. When you raise the issue of federalism or to secede, you want to shatter our unity, you want to break into pieces the nation, there is no possibility to negotiate with those who would like to break our unity and common willingness to live together.
Some of the activists, some of the leaders of their group are being chased, are being arbitrarily arrested, even in the capital, Yaounde. At the universities, they are being harassed, and that the government has a policy, an unwritten policy, of francophonizing the English-speaking country, and that is the problem they are having. What do you say to that?
My friend, please, please. Some few years ago, I was unable to say a single English word. Some few years ago. I am 70 years old. But I made it a point of honor to communicate in this marvelous language, first of all. So the language shall never be a stumbling block or the problem that, or the hurdle that we cannot clear on our way.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's information minister. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaounde. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says allegations that its leader, Frema Umboi, is involved in the drug trafficking ring are intended to silence those critical of President John Magufuli's government. The governor of Dar es Salaam, Paul Makonda, made the allegations against Mr. Umboi and more than 60 other people during a news conference this past Wednesday. Chadema deputy spokesman Peter Msigwa says the accusations are a political slander by a government that he said is not being run properly.
As opposition, we feel that this is a political ploy, is a political slander. We believe that the country is not governed properly. We have incompetent people in most of the position, especially this region commander police and the region commissioner and district commissioner. That's why we are facing this kind of challenges. So it's really unfair to accuse a reputable person like a Freeman Boy for drug trafficking without any evidence. We feel that this matter will end up injuring innocent people and their reputation.
Mr. Msigwa, has there been any kind of legal or law enforcement investigation of Mr. Umboi before this allegation is made, or this is just coming from out of the blue sky?
It just came from the blue, someone on TV and just mentioning names, that he doesn't have that power. There's no summons. You know, according to our law, the police have to investigate and I have to take you according to our constitutional law. But someone on TV just mentioning names and accusing people without any evidence. This is something strange, and we feel that it's really dangerous that the country is not governed properly.
What does this have to do with the country not being governed properly?
You know, for example, members of parliament from the opposition have been arrested several times and they have been refused to get the bail without any reason. So we feel that the president is insecure. He doesn't want to be challenged and he's trying to scare people, especially we opposition party, so that he can do whatever he wants without being challenged.
Chadema is saying that this is an attempt to silence those who are opposed to the government. Do you really believe that?
Yeah, I'm part of what we are saying. We believe that he's trying to silence and scare us. When you mention Freeman Boy, that he is a drug dealer and he's been in politics for more than 20 years leading this party, and we are doing very well trying to challenge the government, and we are almost removing the government in power through the ballot. So they are trying to stop us in whatever they can, using all means. And we believe this is, as I said, this is a political ploy trying to make us look bad for their advantage.
So is Mr. Umboi supposed to, what, turn himself in? Or what's going to happen today, Friday? Is he going to see the police?
He is not going to see the police tomorrow because the guy who asked him to go to the police, he doesn't have those powers. And according to our constitution, the parliament is on session. And if the parliament is on, we're supposed to do the parliament business. So Mr. Boy is in Dodoma, so we are proceeding with our business, our parliament business. Unless they ask him to go to the police properly, according to our law and regulation. Otherwise, he's not going to go. They would rather use force to take him there.
Peter Msigwa is a member of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Standing for Daybreak Africa, Sposen, here is Samson Omale in Johannesburg, South Africa. And good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the latest FIFA ranking released on Thursday as African Cup of Nations winners Cameroon leaped 29 places to occupy the 33rd spot in the world, moving from the 12th position to the 3rd in Africa. But Africa's top-ranked team remains Egypt, who lost in the 2017 AFCON final, but are ranked 25th in the world, but number 1 in Africa. Nations Cup quarterfinalist Senegal, the top African side last month, are second in the February ranking and 31st in general. Tunisia is ranked 4th in Africa, DR Congo 5th, Burkina Faso is number 6, while Nigeria occupies the 7th position. Ghana is number 8, Ivory Coast is number 9, while Morocco wraps up the top 10. Africa's premier club competition, the CAF Champions League, will this weekend begin its 2017 campaign with 23 preliminary round first leg matches taking place across the continent this weekend. 9 clubs, including reigning champions Mamelodi Sundowns, have been given a bye through to the next round. Sundowns will face the winners of the tie between Uganda's KCCA and Primeiro de Agosto of Angola. The teams will meet in the first leg of their tie in Kampala later this afternoon. Elsewhere, surprise Ghanaian champions Wa'al Stars will take their first steps in what they hope will be a long and successful campaign when they face Libya's Al-Ahli Tripoli, while Zambia's Zanaco will hope to follow in the footsteps of compatriots Zesco United, who reached the semifinals last year when they battled APR of Rwanda. Nigeria's Rivers United will face a tough opening match day away to Malian giants Real Bamako, while Stade Malien will battle against Liberia's Barak Young Controllers. The return leg matches will be played on the weekend of the 17th to the 19th of February. And the CAF Confederations Cup, which also begins this weekend, 40 teams will battle to advance into the first round, where 12 seeded clubs, including former winners CS Sfaxien and 2016 Champions League semi-finalist Zesco United, will be slogging it out. Some of the big teams in action this weekend include two-time African champions JS Kabylie of Algeria, who faced Liberia's Monrovia Club Breweries on Friday, while their compatriots MC Alga will have a tough tie against Ghana's Berchem United. The return leg matches will be played on the weekend of the 17th to the 19th of February. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sport. I am Samson Omale in Cape Town, South Africa. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 10th. On this day in 1992, renowned African-American author Alex Haley died. Haley became famous for his publication of the novel Roots, which traces his ancestry back to Africa and covers 7 American generations as they are taken slaves to the United States. The book was adapted to a television series and woke up an interest in genealogy, particularly among African-Americans. Also on this day, 1989, Ronald Brown was elected national chairman of the U.S. Democratic Party and became the first African-American to hold the post. On this day, 1927, African-American opera singer Leontine Price was born in Laurel, Mississippi. She achieved international fame for her brilliant voice. Price performed in many operas, including Aida, a story about an Ethiopian princess. And that's it for this Friday, February 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Nelson Lopez, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, love and Valentine's Day in America. Do you have a Valentine? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing love and Valentine. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.